and I land on my butt with a teeth-jarring thump. So jarring, in fact, that I bite down hard on my tongue. My mouth fills with blood, and I spit it out, hitting the girl in the mirror right in the nose. I yank up the chair again, breathing deep. I forgot one thing I learned in karate. Your ki-ai! The war cry. Laugh at it all you want. It does concentrate your power. The third and final blow shatters the glass. My momentum slams me into the waist-high counter, and my feet come off the floor as the chair tumbles into the adjoining room. I can see another dentist chair, a bank of processors, wires running across the floor, and another door. Please, God, don't let it be locked. I pick up Bear and climb through the hole. I imagine Vosh returning and the look on his face when he sees the busted mirror. The door on the other side isn't locked. It opens into another white cinder block corridor lined with unmarked doors. Ah, the possibilities. But I don't step into that corridor. I hover in the doorway. Before me, the unmarked path. Behind me, the one I've marked. They'll see the hole. They'll know which direction I've taken. How long can I stay ahead of them? My mouth has filled with blood again, and I force myself to swallow it. Can't make it too easy for them to track me. Too easy. I forgot to jam the chair under the door handle in the first room. It won't stop them from getting in, but it would drop some precious seconds into my piggy bank. If something goes wrong, don't overthink, Cassie. You have good instincts. Trust them. Thinking through every step is fine if you're playing chess, but this isn't chess. I run back through the killing room and dive through the hole. I misjudge the width of the counter and flip off the edge, somersaulting onto my back, smacking my head hard against the floor. I lie there for a fuzzy second, bright red stars burning in my vision. I'm looking at the ceiling and the metal ductwork running beneath it. I saw the same setup in the corridors, the bomb shelter's ventilation system. And I think, Cassie, that's the bomb shelter's freaking ventilation system. Chapter 77. Scuttling forward on my stomach, worrying that I'm too heavy for the supports, and that at any second the entire section of pipe will collapse, I scoot along the shaft, pausing at each juncture to listen. Listen for what? I'm not really sure. The crying of frightened children? The laughter of happy children? The air in the shaft is cold, brought in from the outside and funneled underground, sort of like me. The air belongs here. I don't. What did Evan say? Your best bet is the barracks that ring the parade grounds. That's it, Evan. That's the new plan. I'll find the nearest air shaft and climb up to the surface. I won't know where I am or how far I am from the parade grounds, and of course the entire base is going to be in full lockdown, crawling with silencers and their brainwashed child soldiers looking for the girl in the white jumpsuit. And don't forget the teddy bear. Talk about a dead giveaway. Why did I insist on bringing this damn bear? Sam would understand if I left Bear behind. My promise wasn't to bring Bear to him. My promise was to bring me to him. What is the deal with this bear? Every few feet a choice. Turn right, turn left, or keep going straight. And every few feet a pause to listen and to clear the blood from my mouth. Not worried about my blood dripping in here. It's the breadcrumbs that mark my way back. My tongue is swelling, though, and throbs horribly with each beat of my heart, the human clock ticking down, measuring out the minutes I have left before they find me, take me to Vosh, and he finishes me the way he finished my father. Something brown and small is scurrying toward me very fast, like he's on an important errand. A roach! I've encountered cobwebs and loads of dust and some mysterious slimy substance that might be toxic mold, but this is the first truly gross thing I've seen. Give me a spider or a snake over a cockroach any day. And now he's heading right toward my face. With very vivid mental images of the thing crawling inside my jumpsuit, I use the only thing available to squash it. My bare hand. Yuck. I keep moving. There's a glow up ahead, sort of greenish-gray. In my head, I call it Mothership Green. I inch toward the grate from which the glow emanates, peek through the slats into the room below. Only calling it a room doesn't do it justice. It's huge, easily the size of a football stadium, shaped like a bowl, with rows and rows of computer stations at the bottom, manned by over 100 people. Only to call them people is doing real people an injustice. They're them. Vosh's inhuman humans. And I have no clue what they're up to, but I'm thinking this must be it. The heart of the operation. Ground zero of the cleansing. A massive screen takes up an entire wall, projecting a map of the Earth that's dotted with bright green spots, the source of the sickly green light. Cities, I'm thinking. And then I realize the green dots must represent pockets of survivors. Vosh doesn't need to hunt us down. Vosh knows exactly where we are. I wiggle on, forcing myself to go slowly until the green glow is as small as the dots on the map in the control room. 4 junctures down, I hear voices. Men's voices. And the clang of metal on metal, the squeak of rubber soles on hard concrete. Keep moving, Cassie. No more stopping. Sammy's not down there, and Sammy is the objective. Then one of the guys says, "How many did he say?" And the other one goes, "At least 2. The girl and whoever took out Walters and Pierce and Jackson." Whoever took out Walters, Pierce, and Jackson? Evan. It has to be. What the... For a whole minute or two, I'm really furious at him. Our only hope was in my going alone, sliding past their defenses unnoticed and snatching Sam before they realized what was going on. Of course, it hadn't quite worked out that way, but Evan had no way of knowing that. Still... The fact that Evan had ignored our carefully thought-out plan and infiltrated the base also means that Evan is here. And Evan does what he has the heart to do. I edge closer to their voices, passing right over their heads until I reach the grating. I peer through the metal slats and see 2 silencer soldiers loading eye-shaped globes into a large handcart. I recognize what they are right away. I've seen one before. The eye will take care of her. I watch them until the cart is loaded, and they wheel it slowly out of sight. A point will come when the cover isn't sustainable. When that happens, they'll shut down the base, or the part of the base that's expendable. Oh boy. Vosh is going all ash pit on Camp Haven. And the minute that realization hits me, the siren goes off.
Part 10. A Thousand Ways. Chapter 78. 2 hours. The minute Vosh leaves, a clock inside my head begins to tick. No, not a clock. More like a timer ticking down to Armageddon. I'm going to need every second, so where's the orderly? Right when I'm about to pull out the trip myself, he shows up. A tall, skinny kid named Kistner. We met the last time I was laid up. He has a nervous habit of picking at the front of his scrubs, like the material irritates his skin.
"Did he tell you?"
Kistner asks, keeping his voice down as he leans over the bed.
"We've gone code yellow."
"Why?" He shrugs. "You think they tell me anything? I just hope it doesn't mean we're taking another bunker dive. No one in the hospital likes the air raid drills. Getting several hundred patients underground in less than 3 minutes is a tactical nightmare. Better than staying topside and getting incinerated by an alien death ray. Maybe it's psychological, but the minute Kistner pulls the drip, the pain sets in. A dull, throbbing ache where Ringer shot me that keeps time with my heart. As I wait for my head to clear, I wonder if I should reconsider the plan. An evacuation into the underground bunker might simplify things. After the fiasco of Nugget's first air raid drill, Command decided to pull all non-combatant children into a safe room located in the middle of the complex. It'll be a hell of a lot easier snatching him from there than checking every barracks on base. But I have no idea when, or even if, that's going to happen. Better stick to the original plan. Tick-tock. I close my eyes, visualizing each step of the escape with as much detail as possible. I did this before. Back when there were high schools and Friday night games and crowds to cheer at them. Back when winning a district title seemed like the most important thing in the world. Picturing my routes, the arc of the ball sailing toward the lights, the defender keeping pace beside me, the precise moment to turn my head and bring up my hands without breaking stride. Imagining not just the perfect play but the busted one, how I would adjust my route, give the quarterback a target to save the down. There's 1,000 ways this could go wrong and only one way for it to go right. Don't think a play ahead, or two plays, or three. Think about this play, this step. Get it right one step at a time and you'll score. Step 1. The orderly. My best buddy Kistner, giving somebody a sponge bath 2 beds down.
Hey.
I call over to him.
Hey, Kistner.
What is it? Kistner calls back, clearly annoyed with me. He doesn't like to be interrupted.
I have to go to the John.
You're not supposed to get up. You'll tear the sutures.
Oh, come on, Kistner. The bathroom's right over there.
Doctor's orders. I'll bring you a bedpan. I watch him weave his way through the bunks toward the supply station. I'm a little worried I haven't waited long enough for the meds to fade. What if I can't stand up?
Tick-tock, zombie. Tick-tock.
I throw back the covers and swing my legs off the bed, gritting my teeth. This is the hard part. I'm wrapped tight from chest to waist, and pushing myself upright stretches the muscles ripped apart by Ringer's bullet.
I cut you, you shoot me. It's only fair.
But it's escalating. What happens on your next turn? You stick a hand grenade down my pants? That's a disturbing image. Sticking a live grenade down Ringer's pants? On so many levels. I'm still full of dope, but when I sit up, the pain almost makes me black out. So I sit still for a minute, waiting for my head to clear. Step 2. The bathroom.
Force yourself to go slow. Take small steps. Shuffle.
I can feel the back of the gown flapping open. I'm mooning the entire ward. The bathroom is maybe 20 feet away. It feels like 20 miles. If it's locked or if someone's in there, I'm screwed. It's neither. I lock the door behind me. Sink and toilet and a small shower stall. The curtain rod is screwed into the wall. I lift the lid of the commode. A short metal arm that lifts the flapper, dull on both ends. Toilet paper holder is plastic. So much for finding a weapon in here. But I'm still on track.
Come on, Kistner, I'm wide open.
2 sharp raps on the door, and then his voice on the other side. Hey, you in there?
I told you I had to go,
I yell.
And I told you I was bringing a bedpan. Couldn't hold it anymore.
The door handle jiggles.
Unlock this door. Privacy, please,
I holler.
I'm going to call security. All right, like I'm freaking going anywhere.
Count to 10, flip the lock, shuffle to the toilet, sit. The door opens a crack, and I can see a sliver of Kistner's thin face.
Satisfied,
I grunt.
Now can you please close the door?
Kistner stares at me for a long moment, plucking at his shirt. I'll be right out here, he promises.
Good,
I say. The door eases shut. Now 6 slow 10 counts. A good minute.
Hey, Kistner!
What?
I'm gonna need your help.
Define help.
Getting up, I can't get off the damn can. I think I might have torn a suture.
The door flies open. Kistner's face is flushed with anger.
I told you.
He steps in front of me, holds out both hands. Here, grab my wrists.
First, can you close that door? This is embarrassing.
Kistner closes the door. I wrap my fingers around Kistner's wrists.
Ready?
He asks.
Ready as I'll ever be.
Step 3. Wet Willy. As Kistner pulls back, I drive forward with my legs, slamming my shoulder into his narrow chest, knocking him backward into the concrete wall. Then I yank him forward, pivot behind him, and pull his arm up high behind his back. That forces him to his knees in front of the toilet. I grab a handful of his hair, shove his face into the water. Kistner is stronger than he looks, or I'm a lot weaker than I thought. It seems to take forever for him to pass out. I let go and stand back. Kistner does a slow roll and flops onto the floor. Shoes, pants, pulling him upright to yank off the shirt. The shirt's going to be too small, the pants too long, the shoes too tight. I rip off my gown, toss it into the shower stall, pull on Kistner's scrubs. The shoes take the longest, way too small. A sharp pain shoots through my side as I struggle to put them on. Looking down, I see blood seeping through the bandaging. What if I bleed through the shirt? 1,000 ways. Focus on the one way. Drag Kistner into the stall. Fling the curtain closed. How long will he be out? Doesn't matter. Keep moving. Don't think ahead. Step 4. The tracker. I hesitate at the door. What if someone saw Kistner come in and now sees me, dressed as Kistner, coming out? Then you're done. He's going to kill you anyway. Okay, don't just die then. Die trying. The operating room doors are the length of a football field away, past rows of beds, and through what seems like a mob of orderlies and nurses and lab-coated doctors. I walk as quickly as I can toward the doors, favoring my injured side, which throws off my stride, but it can't be helped. For all I know, Vash has been tracking me and he's wondering why I'm not going back to my bunk. Through the swinging doors, now in the scrub room, where a weary-looking doctor is soaped up to his elbows, preparing for surgery. He jumps when I come in. "What are you doing in here?" he demands. "I was looking for some gloves. We've run out up front." The surgeon jerks his head toward a row of cabinets on the opposite wall. "You're limping," he says. "Are you hurt?" I pulled a muscle, getting a fat guy to the john. The doctor rinses the green soap from his forearms. "You should have used a bedpan." Boxes of latex gloves, surgical masks, antiseptic pads, rolls of tape. Where the hell is it? I can feel his breath against the back of my neck. "There's the box right in front of you," he says. The guy's giving me a funny look. "Sorry," I say. "Haven't had much sleep."
"Tell me about it."
The surgeon laughs and elbows me square in the gunshot wound. The room spins, hard. I grit my teeth to keep from screaming. He hurries through the inner doors to the operating theater. I move down the row of cabinets, throwing open doors, rummaging through the supplies, but I can't find what I'm looking for. Lightheaded, out of breath, my side throbbing like hell. How long will Kistner stay out? How long before someone ducks in for a piss and finds him? There's a bin on the floor beside the cabinets labeled hazardous waste. Use gloves and handling. Yank off the top, and bingo. There it is, with wads of bloody surgical sponges, and used syringes, and discarded catheters. Okay, so the scalpel's coated in dried blood. I guess I could sterilize it with an antiseptic wipe, or wash it in the sink, but there's no time, and a dirty scalpel is the least of my worries. Lean against the sink to steady yourself. Push your fingers against your neck to locate the tracker under the skin, and then press, don't slice, the dull, dirty blade into your neck until it splits open. Chapter 79. Step 5. Nugget. A very young-looking doctor hurries down the corridor toward the elevators, wearing a white lab coat and a surgical mask, limping, favoring his left side. If you pulled open his white coat, you might see the dark red stain on his green scrubs. If you pulled down his collar, you might also see the hastily applied bandage on his neck. But if you tried to do either of these things, the young-looking doctor would kill you. Elevator. Closing my eyes as the car descends. Unless somebody's conveniently left a golf cart unattended by the front doors, walking distance to the yard is 10 minutes. Then the hardest part. Finding Nugget among the 50-plus squads bivouacked there and getting him out without waking anybody. So maybe half an hour to seek and snatch. Another 10 or so to slip over to the Wonderland hangar where the buses unload. This is where the plan begins to break down into a series of wild improbabilities. Stowing away on an empty bus, overcoming the driver and any soldiers on board once we're clear of the gate, and then when, where, and how to dump the bus and take off on foot to rendezvous with Ringer.
What if you have to wait for the bus? Where are you going to hide?
I don't know.
And once you're on the bus, how long will you have to wait? 30 minutes? An hour?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, here's what I know. It's too much time, zombie. Somebody's going to sound the alarm.
She's right. It is too much time. I should have killed Kistner. It had been one of the original steps. Step 4.
kill Kistner. But Kistner isn't one of them. Kistner's just a kid, like Tank, like Oompa, like Flint. Kistner didn't ask for this war, and he didn't know the truth about it. Maybe he wouldn't have believed me if I told him the truth, but I never gave him that chance. You're soft. You should have killed him. You can't rely on luck and wishful thinking. The future of humanity belongs to the hardcore. So when the elevator doors slide open to the main lobby, I make a silent promise to Nugget. The promise I didn't make to my sister, whose locket he wears around his neck. If anyone comes between you and me, they're dead. And the minute I make that promise, it's like something in the universe decides to answer, because the air raid sirens go off with an eardrum-busting scream. Perfect. For once, things are going my way. No crossing the length of the camp now. No sneaking into the barracks searching for the nugget in a haystack. No race to the buses. Instead, a straight shot down the stairwell to the underground complex. Grab Nugget in the organized chaos of the safe room, hide out until the all-clear sounds, and then onto the buses. Simple. I'm halfway to the stairs when the deserted lobby lights up in a sickly green glow. The same smoky green that danced around Ringer's head when I slipped on the eyepiece. The overhead fluorescents have cut off, standard procedure in a drill, so the light isn't coming from inside, but from somewhere in the parking lot. I turn around to look. I shouldn't have. Through the glass doors, I see a golf cart racing across the parking lot, heading toward the airfield. Then I see the source of the green light sitting in the covered entranceway of the hospital. Shaped like a football, only twice as big. It reminds me of an eye. I stare at it. It stares back at me. Pulse. 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 Flash, flash, flash. Blink, blink, blink.
Part 11. The Infinite Sea. Chapter 80. The siren's blare is so loud, I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck vibrating. I am scooting backward toward the main duct, away from the armory when I stop. Cassie, it's the armory. Back to the grate, through which I stare for a full 3 minutes, scanning the room below for any sign of movement while the siren pounds against my ears, making it very difficult to concentrate, thank you, Colonel Vosh. Okay, you damn bear, I mumble with my swollen tongue. We're going in. I slam the heel of my bare foot into the grate. Ki-ai! It pops open with one kick. When I quit karate, Mom asked why, and I said it just didn't challenge me anymore. That was my way of saying I was bored, which you were not allowed to say in front of my mother. If she heard you complain that you were bored, you found yourself with a dust rag in your hand. I drop into the room. Well, more a medium-sized warehouse than a room. Everything an alien invader might need to run a human extermination camp. Against that wall you have your eyes, several hundred of them, stacked neatly in their own specially designed cubby. On the opposite wall, rows and rows of rifles and grenade launchers, another weaponry that I would have no clue what to do with. Smaller weapons over there, semi-automatics and grenades and 10-inch-long combat knives. There's a wardrobe section, too, representing every branch of the service and every possible rank, with all the gear to go with it, belts and boots and the military version of the fanny pack. And me, like a kid in a candy shop. First, off comes the white jumpsuit. I pull the smallest set of fatigues I can find and put them on, slip on the boots. Time to gear up. A Luger with a full clip. A couple of grenades. M16? Why not? If you're going to play the part, look the part. I drop a couple extra clips into my fanny pack. Oh look, my belt even has a holster for one of those 10-inch wicked-looking knives. Hi there, 10-inch wicked-looking knife. There's a wooden box beside the gun cabinet. I peek inside and see a stack of gray metal tubes. What are these, some kind of stick grenade? I pick one up. It's hollow and threaded at one end. Now I know what it is. A silencer. And it fits perfectly on the barrel of my new M16. Screws right in. I stuff my hair under a cap that is too large for me, and wish I had a mirror. I'm hoping to pass for one of Vosh's tween recruits, but I probably look more like G.I. Joe's little sister playing dress-up. Now what to do with Bear? I find a leather satchel-looking thing and stuff him inside, throw the strap crossways over my shoulder. I've stopped noticing the blaring siren by this point. I'm all jacked up. Not only have I evened the odds a little, I know Evan is here, and Evan will not give up until I am safe or he is dead. Back to the ductwork, and I'm debating whether to attempt it, weighed down as I am with 20 or so extra pounds, or take my chances in the corridors. What good is a disguise if you're going all stealthy with it? I turn around and head toward the door, and that's when the siren cuts off and the silence slams down. I don't take that as a good sign. It also occurs to me that being in an armory full of green bombs, one of which can level a square mile, while a dozen or so of their closest friends are being set off upstairs, might not be such a good idea. I haul ass for the door, but I don't make it before the first eye goes. The entire room jiggles. Only a few feet left, and the next eye blinks its last blink, and this one must be closer because dust rains down from the ceiling, and the duct at the other end snaps free of its supports and comes crashing down. Vashi, that was kind of close, don't you think? I push through the door. No time to scout the territory. The more distance I can put between me and the remaining eyes, the better. I sprint under the swirling red lights, turning down hallways at random, trying not to think anything through, just going on instinct and luck. Another explosion. The walls tremble, the dust falls. From above, the sound of the buildings being ripped and shredded down to their last nails. And here below, the screaming of terrified children. I follow the screams. Sometimes I make a wrong turn and the cries grow fainter. I backtrack, then try the next corridor. This place is like a maze and me the lab rat. The booming from above has stopped, at least for the moment, and I slow to a trot, gripping the rifle hard with both hands, trying one passage, backtracking when the crying fades and moving on again. I hear Major Bob's voice on a bullhorn bouncing along the walls, coming from everywhere and nowhere.
Okay, I want you all to stay seated with your group leader. Everybody quiet down and listen to me. Stay with your group leaders.
I turn a corner and see a squad of soldiers running right at me. Teenagers mostly. I throw myself against the wall and they rush past me without even glancing in my direction. Why would they notice me? I'm just another recruit on our way to battle the alien horde. They turn a corner and I'm moving again. I can hear the kids jabbering and whimpering despite Major Bob scolding around the next bend. Almost there, Sam. Now you be there.
Halt!
Shouted from behind me. Not a kid's voice. I stop, square my shoulders, stay still.
Where's your duty station, soldier? Soldier, I'm talking to you! Ordered to guard the children, sir!
I say in the deepest voice I can muster.
Turn around! Look at me when you address me, soldier!
I sigh. Turn. He's in his mid-20s, not bad-looking, an all-American boy type. I don't know military insignia, but I think he might be an officer. To be absolutely safe, anyone over 18 is suspect. There may be some human adults in positions of authority, but knowing Vosh, I doubt it. So if it's an adult, and especially if it's an officer, I think you can assume they are not human.
What's your number?
He barks. My number? I blurt out the first thing that pops into my head.
T-62, sir!
He gives me a puzzled look.
T-62? Are you sure? Yes, sir, sir!
Sir, sir? Oh, God, Cassie?
Why aren't you with your unit?
He doesn't wait for an answer, and good thing, because nothing is really coming to mind. He steps forward and looks me up and down, and clearly I'm not in regulation. Officer Alien does not like what he sees.
Where's your name tag, soldier? And what are you doing with a suppressor on your weapon? And what is this?
He pulls on the bulging leather satchel holding Bear. I pull back. The satchel pops open and I'm busted.
It's a teddy bear, sir! A what?
He stares down at my upturned face and something crosses over his as the light bulb comes on and he realizes who he's looking at. His right hand flies toward his sidearm, but that's a really dumb move when all he had to do was lay his fist upside my teddy bear toting head. I swing the silencer in a slicing arc, stopping it an inch from his boyish good looks, and pull the trigger. Now you've done it, Cassie. Blown the one chance you had, and you were so close. I can't just leave Officer Alien where he fell. They might miss all the blood and the hurly-burly of battle, and it's nearly invisible anyway in the spinning red light, but not the body. What am I going to do with the body? I'm close, so close, and I'm not gonna let some dead guy keep me from Sammy. I grab him by the ankles and drag him back down the corridor, into another passageway, around another corner, and then drop him. He's heavier than he looks. I take a moment to stretch out the kink in my lower back before hurrying away. Now if someone stops me before I can reach the safe room, my plan is to say whatever is necessary to avoid killing again. Unless I'm given no choice. And then I will kill again. Evan was right. It does get a little easier each time. The room is packed with kids. Hundreds of kids. Dressed in identical white jumpsuits. Sitting in big groups spread over an area about the size of a high school gymnasium. They've quieted down some. Maybe I should just shout out Sam's name. Or borrow Major Bob's bullhorn. I pick my way through the room, lifting my boots high to avoid stepping on any little fingers or toes. So many faces. They begin to blur together. The room expands, explodes past the walls, extending to infinity, filled with billions of little upturned faces, and oh, those bastards, what have they done? In my tent, I cried for myself and the silly, stupid life that had been taken from me. Now I beg forgiveness from the infinite sea of upturned faces. I'm still stumbling around like a zombie when I hear a little voice calling my name. Coming from a group I had just passed. And it's funny he recognized me and not the other way around. I go still. I do not turn. I close my eyes, but can't bring myself to turn around. Cassie? I lower my head. There is a lump the size of Texas caught in my throat. And then I turn, and he's staring at me with something like fear, like this might be the last straw, seeing a dead ringer for his sister tiptoeing around dressed up like a soldier, like he's reached the outer limits of the other's cruelty. I kneel in front of my brother. He doesn't rush into my arms. He stares at my tear-streaked face and brings his fingers to my wet cheek. Across my nose, forehead, chin, over my fluttering eyelids. Cassie? Is it okay now? Can he believe? If the world breaks a million and one promises, can you trust the million and second? Hey, Sams. He cocks his head slightly. I must sound funny to him with the bloated tongue. I fumble with the clasp of the leather satchel. I thought you might want this back. I pull out the battered old teddy bear and hold it toward him. He frowns and shakes his head and doesn't reach for it. And I feel like he's punched me in the gut. Then my baby brother slaps that damned bear out of my hand and crushes his face against my chest. And beneath the odors of sweat and strong soap, I can smell it. His smell. Sammy's. My brother's.
Part 12. Because of Kistner. Chapter 81. The green eye looked at me and I looked back at it. And I don't remember what snatched me back from the edge between the blinking eye and what came next. My first clear memory? Running. Lobby. Stairwell. Basement level. First landing. Second landing. When I hit the third landing, the concussion of the blast slams into my back like a wrecking ball, hurling me down the stairs and into the door that opens to the bomb shelter. Above me, the hospital screams as it's torn apart. That's what it sounds like. A living thing screaming as it's being ripped to pieces.
the thunderous crack of mortar and stone shattering, the screech of nails snapping and the shriek of 200 windows exploding. The floor buckles, splits open. I dive headfirst into the hallway of reinforced concrete as the building above me disintegrates. The lights flicker once, and then the corridor plunges into darkness. I've never been to this part of the complex, but I don't need the luminescent arrows on the walls to show me the way to the safe room. All I have to do is follow the terrified screams of the children. But first it would be helpful to stand. The fall has completely torn open the sutures. I'm bleeding heavily now, from both wounds, where Ringer's bullet went in and where it came out. I try to stand up. I give it my best shot, but my legs won't hold me up. I get halfway up and then down again I go, head spinning, gasping for air. A second explosion knocks me flat out on the floor. I manage to crawl a few inches before a third blast knocks me down again. Damn it, what are you doing up there, Vosh?
If it is too late, we'll have no choice but to execute the option of last resort. Well, guess that particular mystery is solved. Vosh is blowing up his own base, destroying the village in order to save it. But save it from what? Unless it isn't Vosh. Maybe Ringer and I are totally wrong. Maybe I'm risking my life and Nuggets for nothing. Camp Haven is what Vosh says it is, and that means Ringer walked into a camp of infested with her guard down. Ringer is dead. Ringer and Dumbo and Pound Cake and Little Teacup. Christ, have I done it again? Run when I should have stayed? Turn my back when I should have fought? The next explosion is the worst. It hits directly overhead. I cover my head with both arms as chunks of concrete as big as my fist rain down. The concussions from the bombs, the drug lingering in my system, the loss of blood, the darkness, all of it conspires to pin me down. From a distance, I can hear someone screaming, and then I realize that it's me.
You have to get up. You have to get up. You have to keep your promise to Sissy.
No, not Sissy. Sissy's dead.
You left her behind, you stinking bag of regurgitated puke. Damn, it hurts. The pain of the wounds that bleed and the pain of the old wound that will not heal.
Sissy, with me in the dark. I can see her hand reaching for me in the dark.
I'm here, Sissy. Take my hand.
Reaching for her in the dark. Chapter 82. Sissy pulls away, and I'm alone again. When the moment comes to stop running from your past, to turn around and face the thing you thought you could not face, the moment when your life teeters between giving up and getting up, when that moment comes, and it always comes, if you can't get up and you can't give up either, here's what you do. Crawl. Sliding forward on my stomach, I reach the intersection of the main corridor that runs the length of the complex. Have to rest. 2 minutes, no more. The emergency lights flicker on. I know where I am now. Left to the air shaft, right to the central command hub and the safe room. Tick, tock. My 2 minute break is over. I push myself to my feet using the wall for support, and I nearly black out from the pain. Even if I grab Nugget without getting grabbed myself, how will I get him out of here in this condition? Plus, I sincerely doubt there are any buses left. Or any Camp Haven, for that matter. Once I grab him, if I grab him, where the hell are we going to go? I shuffle down the corridor, keeping one hand on the wall to steady myself. Ahead, I can hear someone shouting at the kids in the safe room, telling them to stay calm and stay seated. Everything was going to be okay and they were perfectly safe. Tick, tock. Right before the final turn, I glance to my left and see something crumpled against the wall. A human body. A dead human body. Still warm. Wearing a lieutenant's uniform. Half its face blasted away by a high-caliber bullet fired at close range. Not a recruit. One of them. Has someone else figured out the truth here? Maybe. Or maybe the dead guy was shot by a trigger-happy, jacked-up recruit, mistaking him for a Ted. No more wishful thinking, Parrish. I pull the sidearm from the dead man's holster and slip it into the pocket of the lab coat. Then I pull the surgical mask over my face. Dr. Zombie, you're wanted in the safe room, stat. And there it is, straight ahead, A few more yards, and I'm there. I made it, Nugget. I'm here. Now you be here. And it's like he heard me, because there he is walking toward me, carrying, believe it or not, a teddy bear. Only he isn't alone. There's someone with him. A recruit around Dumbo's age in a baggy uniform and a cap pulled down low, the brim resting just above his eyes, carrying an M16 with some kind of metal pipe attached to its barrel. No time to think it through, because faking my way through this one will take too much time and rely too much on luck. And it isn't about luck anymore. It's about being hardcore. Because this is the last war, and only the hardcore will survive it. Because of the step in the plan I skipped over. Because of Kistner. I dropped my hand into the coat pocket. I closed the gap. Not yet. Not yet. My wound throws off my stride. I have to take him down with the first shot. Yes, he's a kid. Yes, he's innocent. And yes, he's toast.
Part 13. The Black Hole. Chapter 83. I want to drink in his sweet Sammy smell forever, but I can't. The place is crawling with armed soldiers, some of them silencers, or anyway, not teens, so I have to assume they're silencers. I lead Sammy over to a wall, putting a group of kids between us and the nearest guard. I scrunch down as low as possible and whisper, "Are you okay?" He nods. "I knew you'd come, Cassie." "I promised, right?" He's wearing a heart-shaped locket around his neck. "What the heck?" I touch it, and he pulls back a little. "Why are you dressed like that?" he asks. "I'll explain later." "You're a soldier now, aren't you? What squad are you in?"
"Squad?"
"No squad," I tell him. "I'm my own squad." He frowns. "You can't be your own squad, Cassie." This isn't really the time to get into the whole ridiculous squad thing. I glance around the room. "Sam, we're getting out of here." "I know. Major Bob says we're going on a big plane." He nods toward Major Bob, starts to wave at him. I push his hand down. "A big plane? When?" He shrugs. "Soon?" He's picked up Bear. Now he examines him, turning him over in his hands. "His ear's ripped," he points out accusingly, like I've shirked my duty. "Tonight?" I ask. "Sam, this is important. You're flying out tonight?" "That's what Major Bob said. He said they're evacuating all non-essentials."
"Evacuating?
Oh, okay, so they're evacuating the kids." My mind is racing, trying to work through it. Is that the way out? Just stroll on board with the others and take our chances when we land, wherever we land? God, why did I ditch the white jumpsuit? But even if I kept it and was able to sneak onto the plane, that wasn't the plan. "There's going to be escape pods somewhere on the base, probably near the command center or Vosh's quarters. Basically, they're one-man rockets, pre-programmed to land you safely at some spot far from the base. Don't ask me where. But the pods are your best bet. Not human technology, but I'll explain how you operate one. If you can find one, and if both of you can fit in one, and if you live long enough to find one to fit in." That's a lot of ifs. Maybe I should beat up a kid my size and take her jumpsuit. "How long have you been here, Cassie?" Sam asks. I think he suspects I've been avoiding him. Maybe because I let Bear's ear get torn. "Longer than I wanted to be," I mutter, and that decides it. We're not staying here a minute longer than we have to, and we're not taking some one-way flight to Camp Haven, too. I'm not trading one death camp for another. He's playing with Bear's torn ear. Not his first injury by a long shot. I've lost count of how many times Mom had to patch him up. He has more stitches in him than Frankenstein. I lean over to get Sammy's attention, and that's when he looks right at me and asks, "Where's Daddy?" My mouth moves, but no sound comes out. I hadn't even thought about telling him, or how to tell him. "Dad? Oh, he's..." "No, Cassie, don't get complicated." I don't want him having a meltdown right as we're preparing to make our getaway. I decide to let Dad live a little longer. He's waiting for us back at Camp Ashpit. His lower lip starts to quiver.
Daddy isn't here?
Daddy is busy, I say, hoping to shut him down, and I feel like crap doing it. That's why he sent me, to get you. And that's what I'm doing right now, getting you. I pull him to his feet. He goes,
but what about the plane?
You've been bumped. He gives me a puzzled look. Bumped? Let's go. I grab his hand and head for the tunnel, keeping my shoulders back and my head up, because skulking toward the nearest exit like Shaggy and Scooby tinkle-toeing is sure to draw attention. I even bark at some kids to get out of the way. If someone tries to stop us, I won't shoot them. I'll explain that the kid is sick, and I'm getting him to a doctor before he pukes all over himself and everybody else. If they don't buy my story, then I shoot them. And then we're in the tunnel, and, incredibly, there is a doctor walking straight at us, half his face hidden behind a surgical mask. His eyes widen when he sees us, and there goes my clever cover story, which means if he stops us, I'll have to shoot him. As we draw closer, I see him casually drop his hand into the pocket of his white coat, and the alarm sounds in my head, the same alarm that went off in the convenience store behind the beer coolers right before I pumped an entire clip into a crucifix-holding soldier. I have one half of one half second to decide. This is the first rule of the last war. Trust no one. I level the silencer at his chest as his hand emerges from the pocket. The hand that holds a gun. But my hand holds an M16 assault rifle. How long is one half of one half second? Long enough for a little boy who doesn't know the first rule to leap between the gun and the rifle.
Sammy!
I yell, pulling up the shot. My little brother hops onto his toes. His fingers tear at the doctor's mask and yank it down. I'd hate to see the look on my face when that mask came down and I saw the face behind it. Thinner than I remember. Paler. The eyes sunk deep into their sockets, kind of glazed over. Like he's sick or hurt. But I recognize it. I know whose face was hidden behind that mask. I just can't process it. Here, in this place. 1,000 years later and 1,000,000 miles from the halls of George Barnard High School. Here, in the belly of the beast, at the bottom of the world, standing right in front of me. Benjamin Thomas Parrish. And Cassiopeia Marie Sullivan, having a full-bore, out-of-body experience, seeing herself seeing him. The last time she saw him was in their high school gymnasium after the lights went out, and then only the back of his head, and the only times that she's seen him since happened in her mind, the rational part of which always knew Ben Parrish was dead like everyone else.
Zombie!
Sammy calls.
I knew it was you!
Zombie? Where are you taking him? Ben says to me in a deep voice. I don't remember it being that deep. Is my memory bad, or is he lowering it on purpose to sound older?
Zombie, that's Cassie, Sam chides him. You know, Cassie.
Cassie? Like he's never heard the name before. Zombie? I say, because I really haven't heard that name before. I pull off the cap, thinking it might help him recognize me, then immediately regret it. I know what my hair must look like. We go to the same high school, I say, drawing my fingers hastily through my chopped-off locks. I sit in front of you in honors chemistry. Ben shakes his head like he's clearing out the cobwebs. Sammy goes,
I told you she was coming.
Quiet, Sam, I scold him.
Sam? Ben asks. My name is Nugget now, Cassie, Sam informs me.
Well, sure it is. I turn to Ben. You know my brother. Ben nods carefully. I still don't get his attitude. Not that I expect him to throw his arms around me or even remember me from chemistry class, but his voice is tight and he's still holding the gun by his side.
Why are you dressed like a doctor? Sammy asks.
Ben like a doctor, me like a soldier. Like two kids playing dress-up. A fake doctor and a fake soldier debating with themselves whether to blow the other one's brains out. Those first few moments between me and Ben Parrish were very strange.
I came to get you out of here, Ben says to Sam, still looking at me.
Sam glances over at me. Isn't that why I came? Now he's really confused. You're not taking my brother anywhere, I say.
It's a lie, Ben blurts out at me. Vosh is one of them. They're using us to kill off the survivors, to kill each other.
I know that, I snap. How do you know that, and what does that have to do with taking Sam? Ben seems stunned by my response to his bombshell. Then I get it. He thinks I've been indoctrinated like everybody else in the camp. It's so ridiculous, I actually laugh. While I'm laughing like an idiot, I get something else. He hasn't been brainwashed either. Which means I can trust him. Unless he's playing me, getting me to lower my guard and my weapon, so he can waste me and take Sam. Which means I can't trust him. I also can't read his mind, but he must be thinking along the same lines when I burst out laughing. Why is this crazy girl with the helmet hair laughing? Because he stated the obvious or because I think his story's crap?
I know, Sammy says to broker the peace. We can all go together.
Do you know a way out of here? I ask Ben. Sammy's more trusting than I am, but the idea's worth exploring. Finding the escape pods, if they even exist, has always been the weakest part of my getaway plan. He nods.
Do you?
I know a way. I just don't know the way to the way.
The way to the way? Okay.
He grins. He looks like hell, but the smile hasn't changed a bit. It lights up the tunnel like a 1,000-watt bulb.
I know the way, and the way to the way.
He drops the gun into his pocket and holds out his empty hand.
Let's go together.
The thing that gets me is whether I'd take that hand if it belonged to anyone other than Ben Parrish. Chapter 84. Sammy notices the blood before I do.
It's nothing, Ben grunts.
I don't get that from the look on his face. From the look on his face, it's a lot more than nothing.
It's a long story, Nugget, Ben says. I'll tell you later.
Where are we going? I ask. Not that we're getting there, wherever it is, very fast. Ben is shuffling along the maze of corridors like an actual zombie. The face of the Ben I remember is still there, but it's faded. Or maybe not faded, but congealed into a leaner, sharper, harder version of his old face. Like someone cut away the parts that weren't absolutely necessary for Ben to maintain his Ben essence.
In general, the hell out of here. After this next tunnel coming up on the right. It leads to an air shaft that we can...
Wait! I grab his arm. In my shock at seeing him again, I'd completely forgotten. Sammy's tracker. He stares at me for a second and then laughs ruefully.
I completely forgot.
Forgot what? Sammy asks. I go to one knee, take his hands in mine. We're several corridors away from the safe room, but Major Bob's megaphoned voice still bounces and skips along the tunnels. Sams, there's something we have to do. Something very important. The people here, they're not who they say they are.
Who are they?
He whispers. Bad people, Sam. Very bad people.
Ted's. Ben puts in. Dr. Pam, the soldiers, the commander. Even the commander. They're all infesteds. They tricked us, Nugget.
Sammy's eyes are as big as pie plates. The commander, too?
The commander, too, Ben answers. So we're getting out of here, and we're going to meet up with Ringer.
He catches me staring at him.
That's not her real name.
Really? I shake my head. Zombie, Nugget, Ringer. Must be an army thing. I turn back to Sam. They lied about a lot of things, Sam. About almost everything. I let go of his hand and run my fingers up the back of his neck, finding the small lump beneath the skin. This is one of their lies, this thing they put in you. They use it to track you,
but they can also use it to hurt you. Ben squats down beside me. So we have to get it out, Nugget. Sam nods, fat bottom lip quivering, big eyes filling up with tears.
Okay.
But you have to be very quiet and very still, I caution him. You can't yell or cry or twist around. Think you can do that? He nods again, and a tear pops out and drops on my forearm. I stand up, and Ben and I step away for a brief preoperative conference. We'll have to use this, I say, showing him the 10-inch combat knife, which I'm careful not to let Sammy see. Ben's eyes widen.
If you say so, but I was going to use this.
And he pulls a scalpel from his lab coat pocket. That's probably better.
You want to do it?
I should do it. He's my brother. But the thought of cutting into Sammy's neck gives me the squishies.
I can do it, Ben offers. You hold him and I'll cut.
So it's not a disguise. You earned your MD here at ET University? He smiles grimly. Just try to keep him as still as possible so I don't slice into something important. We return to Sam, who's sitting now with his back against the wall, pressing Bear into his chest and watching us, eyes flicking fearfully back and forth. I whisper to Ben, If you hurt him, Parrish, I'm sticking this knife into your heart. He looks at me, startled. I would never hurt him. I ease Sam into my lap, roll him over so he's lying face down across my legs, his chin hanging over the edge of my thigh. Ben kneels down. I look at the hand holding the scalpel. It's shaking. I'm okay, Ben whispers. Really, I'm okay. Don't let him move.
Cassie? Sammy whimpers.
Shh, shh, stay very still. He'll be quick, I say. Be quick, I tell Ben. I hold Sam's head with both hands. As Ben's hand approaches with the scalpel, it becomes rock steady.
Hey, Nugget, he says. Okay if I take the locket back first?
Sammy nods, and Ben undoes the clasp. The metal clinks in his hand as he pulls it free. It's yours? I ask Ben, startled.
My sister's.
Ben drops the chain into his pocket. The way he says it, I know she's dead. I turn my head. 30 minutes ago, I'd blown a guy's face off, and now I can't watch someone make the tiniest of cuts. Sammy jerks when the blade breaks his skin. He bites down on my leg to keep from screaming, bites hard. It takes everything in me to remain still. If I move, Ben's hand might slip.
Hurry,
I squeak, mouse-voiced.
Got it.
The tracker adheres to the end of Ben's bloody middle finger. Get rid of it. Ben shakes it off his hand and slaps a bandage over the wound. He came prepared. I came with a 10-inch combat knife.
Okay, it's over, Sam, I moan. You can stop biting me now.
It hurts, Cassie.
I know, I know. I pull him up and give him a big hug. And you were very brave. He nods seriously. I know. Ben offers me his hand, helps me to my feet. His hand is tacky with my brother's blood. He drops the scalpel into his pocket and then the gun is back in his hand.
We better get moving, he says calmly, like we might miss a bus.
Back into the main corridor, Sammy leaning hard against my side. We make the last turn, and Ben stops so suddenly I run right into his back. The tunnel echoes with the sound of a dozen semi-automatics being racked, and I hear a familiar voice say,
You're late, Ben. I expected you much sooner.
A very deep voice, hard as steel. Chapter 85. I lose Sammy for a second time. A silencer soldier takes him away, back to the safe room to be evacuated with the other kids, I guess. Another silencer brings Ben and me to the execution room, the room with the mirror and the button, the room where innocent people are wired up and electrocuted, the room of blood and lies. Seems fitting.
Do you know why we will win this war?
Vosh asks us after we're locked inside.
Why we cannot lose? because we know how you